We're holding an Erevin, page Yud Zayin, beginning Ador Perek Shishi, or Islam Aleph. The subject of the Perek is mainly about Erevei Chatzeres, and one of the things it talks about near the beginning is if Jews and Goyim live in the same Chatzer, what do you do as far as an Erev Chatzeres? So you have the concept of Schiras Rishus, where you have to sort of symbolically rent the common areas from the goy. Nowadays is a common thing, for example, in apartment buildings, and for that matter, in city Erevin, where you have to deal with that. Whereas in an apartment building, you generally deal with the super, or the city Erev, they deal with the mayor, or the police officer, or the police department, or what have you. Anyway, the point is, the Mishnah presents a machloikas. What about if you have one Jew and one goy living in that chatzer? Is it enough to cause a problem? I mean, Yid can't carry there unless he does chidos rishus from a goy. Or Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov says that you need at least two Jews and one goy for it to be an issue. And one goy, if it was one Jew and one goy, there wouldn't be an issue. So the Gemara discusses the point that the halacha is like Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov. So that leads the Gemara into the following discussion. Given that we know the halacha is like him. And the true, and you have to realize, you know, nowadays we have eventually the halacha in most machlokas tanoim is usually paskin one way or the other, according to Stam Mishnah, or according to Rabbi, or whatever the various rules are. In the times of the Amiroyim, it was much less common. You often had that you have different opinions, and it hadn't yet been decided officially who the halacha is like. Here, the Gemara says it's a given the halacha is like Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov in this, and people are knowing that way. So that leads the Gemara into the discussion then. Or would a Talmud be allowed to paskin halacha like that for somebody in front of his Rebbe? Or actually, first the Gemara starts talking about a Talmud Chavar. A Talmud Chavar is basically, it's a combination of Talmud and Chavar. So this is somebody, for example, who he's a Talmud of somebody. He needs to know there's certain areas of Torah, certain details of Torah Shabbat Peh that he doesn't know yet, that he needs his Rebbe for. But in other ways, he's a Chavar, he's a colleague, and they're learning from each other, kind of. Examples of that in the Gemara, for example, Rav Huna and Rav Chista are one example of that kind of relationship that the Gemara mentions. Rav Huna is the Rosh Hashiva and Rav Chista is his Talmud, but there are details where Rav Huna needed to ask Rav Chista things and vice versa. So the question is, can a Talmud Chavar paskin such a thing in the presence of his Rebbe? So that leads the Gemara into a whole discussion about the dinim of that, what a Talmud Chavar is and isn't allowed to do in the presence of his Rebbe. So now, in this connection, so another example of a Talmud Chavar like that is Ravina and Rav Ashi, and that brings us to the piece now that's an Ein Yaakov. Ravina have a Yosef Kameid Rav Ashi. Ravina was sitting as a Talmud Chavar in front of Rav Ashi. Chazilau hu gavra de kotir chamre, or de ka'osulev chamre, but sinisa b'shabsa. He saw, this was on Shabbos, he saw that somebody is tying his donkey. De kotir chamre would mean he's tying his donkey. De ka'osulev chamre is another way of expressing the same point, but kotir means involving a knot, also doesn't necessarily. Anyway, but sinisa on a palm tree, b'shabsa, and it was on Shabbos. So according to the Girsa de Kotir Chamre, the problem might have been, it wouldn't have been an Issur D'oraisa either way. The kind of knot that's an Issur D'oraisa is only the kind that's a professional knot and that's done permanently. And obviously here the guy is not doing it permanently because he's not going to leave his animal tied there permanently. So it would be an Issur D'rabbon. But there's also the Issur D'rabbon involving using a tree on Shabbos. So there's either one or two Issurim involved already. Anyway, Rama Bekola, so Ravina yelled at the guy to stop. Loyashkachbe, and the guy didn't pay attention. Omale, so Ravina calls out to him, Lehevi ahai gabra b'shamta. That person, meaning you, are going to be in chev. Now, having said that, Omale, now he says to Ravashi, ki hai gavna mi mischazi kaftirusa. Acting like that, is it considered hefkerus? Is it considered chutzpah for me to be doing that in your presence? So either you have, different Mephoshim understand, either the problem is that he is a Talmud Chavar, and as the Gemara was saying before, even a Talmud Chavar is maybe not supposed to be paskin halacha in front of his Rebbe. There's different Rishonim have different views on that. Or maybe even the Rivosh talks about it in one of his Truvas. He says that may have been the problem, or the problem might be maybe a Talmud Chavar is allowed to, but not necessarily to go and actually put the person in Cherem. That's maybe something that should be reserved for the Rebbe. So that's what the Gemara is going to answer. So that's the thing. To tell him no, then for sure that you're allowed to do lafrushim eisura. But here, so that's the thing. So there's two ways of understanding: is the issue that he's doing it in front of his Rebbe, or is the issue specifically that he's putting him in chayim? Right. Amalei, sort of Ashi answers him with a quotation from a pasuk: Ein chochma ve'ein tvuna ve'ein etzel neged Hashem. There's no wisdom, there's no understanding, and there's no advice when it's opposite Hashem. Meaning, kol makom sheyesh chilul Hashem ein chilkin kavod l'rav. Wherever there's a chilul Hashem involved, you don't give kavod to the Rebbe. So yeah, in this case, lafrushim isur. He's telling the person to stop doing the isur. So that's legitimate, even if his Rebbe is there, even if it wasn't a Talmud chaver, even if it was an actual Talmud, a full fledged Talmud. And according to the second explanation also, he's saying in this case, where the guy's not listening, then yes, as a Talmud Chavur, you have a right to be putting him in Chayrim, even in my presence. So the Gemara continues, Omar Rava, the fun of also v'chayiv Nisa, when the Talmud paskins in front of his Rebbe, then not only is also, but he's chayiv Nisa b'dei Shemayim for that. Rashi points out, we're not talking about over here where it's lafrushim isura, that's different. Here we're just talking about a regular case. Somebody comes with a question in halacha, and a Talmud decides it in the presence of his Rebbe. So he's also en chayiv misa. Shaloi b'fonav also ve'en chayiv misa. If it's not in his presence, then it's also osur, but he's not chayiv misa. You have machlokas between Tosfos and other Rishonim, the Rashba in particular, what's considered b'fonav, what's considered shaloi b'fonav, Udiyu in the Gemara, that's not an en yakov, that talks about the idea of three parsois away. So there's does that mean that within three parsois is considered b'fonav, even if you're not right in his presence, or not? Tosfos holds that yes, so they say that any place within three parsois would be what the Gemara is saying, also v'chayiv misa. So only outside three parsois, it's also, but not chayiv misa. And the Rashba learns differently and says that that within the three parasites also, but not chayiv misa. Chayiv misa b'dei shemayim would only be when he actually does it in his Rebbe's presence. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, v'shaloi b'fon of loy. So you're telling me that when he's not doing it in the presence of his Rebbe, there's not a problem. He's not chayiv misa. V'hatanya, we learn in a brayse, Rabbi Lozo Omer, loy mesu bon of shal Aaron el al shahodu halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabban. Aaron's sons, Nadav and Avihu, passed away only because they paskin halacha in front of their Rebbe Moshe. What was the halacha that they did? What was the halacha that they paskin? My drush, what are they darshin? The pasuk says, "V'nosnu b'nei Aaron akoyin eishal amizbeach." The sons of Aaron akoyin should put fire on the mizbeach. Now you have to ask, why should they need to put fire? There's a fire min hashamayim on the mizbeach. So what do they need to put? Omru. So they figured out what the pasuk means. Even though fire comes down from Shemayim on the Mizbeach, mitzvah lahavi min ahediyot, there's still a special mitzvah to also bring regular fire and put it on the Mizbeach as well. Don't just have a sirusa de la eila, you also need to provide you a sirusa de la sata. So they were correct in that, but they were paskining it in front of Moshe, and that's the thing. We're not saying literally in front of Moshe. They were in the same machna, so therefore, so we see that even when it's shaloi b'fonav, then it can also be a problem. Tosfos actually discusses, that's printed in the Gemara, where exactly were they planning to do this anyway? This pasuk that says afli she'esh yeretz min shemayim mitzvah lahavi min ahediyot is talking about the mizbeach achitzay, where they bring the korbanos. So that one, there's a fire min hashemayim, and that one, nevertheless, you have to bring a fire min ahediyot. The Mizbeach HaZahav, which is presumably where they were going to be bringing their Torahs, there you have it's different. There's no fire min hashamayim that goes on that Mizbeach. Every day, a Kohen takes a pan full of coal twice a day, because he's bringing the Torahs twice a day. It describes in Mishnayos Tamid that a Kohen takes a pan full of coals from the Mizbeach HaChitzon and brings it into there. So there's no mitzvah lahavi min ahediyot. You're just bringing from the fire of the mizbeach, and yet the implication seems to be that they were bringing ketores on the mizbeach apnimi, or even Tosfos brings. The Medrash said they were actually bringing it in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So what exactly was the nature of this drosha of theirs anyway? Some of Foshim talk about that maybe in fact. So first of all, obviously there can be different opinions what they were doing. But one possibility is they may have actually, we know they were offering Torahs that particular day. It was the first day, it was the eighth day of the Miluim. It was also the day when Nachshon ben Aminadav is bringing his korban. And we know he and all the other Nesiim brought Kafachas Asara Zahav Maleach Torahs, and it was offered on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, and even though normally Torahs is never offered over there, but Hashem made an exception this time to show how precious their korbanos are. So therefore, it may be the same kind of thing that Nadav and Avihu did that. They're actually offering their Torahs on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, and they figured on the basis of this Jerusha that they need to bring their own fire for it. So again, Jerusha may well have been correct, but they weren't supposed to be paskining that in front of Moshe. Mechila from the Rebbe can help. In fact, Ion Yaakov talks about that soon on a line that the Gemara says, Roy Lakisha Nachash. We'll get to that soon. Nevertheless, it's true. The Rebbe may be Moichel, but still the Talmud has no business doing it. Marshall talks about, you know, when you get down to it, you have Midrashim talk about a lot of different exponents. What do you mean that Lloyd Mesu Bnei Aaron El Al Shahodu Alocha Bnei Moshe Rabban? Midrashim give a whole bunch of reasons why they were Chayiv Misa. They drank wine. They weren't married. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that they spoke disparagingly about Moshe and Aaron. There's a whole bunch of different reasons that are brought all over the place. What are we saying? This is the only reason. So Marsha explains, sure, there were lots of reasons why they were Chayiv Misa. What we're saying is, why Davka were they killed with an Eish Min HaShemayim? Is because their murder halacha b'fnei Rabban had to do something with fire, so they decided they needed an Eish Min HaHedyot, so therefore they were punished with an Eish Min HaShemayim. Had it not been for that, it would have been some other way. Different explanation that some Mefarshim say, I think Ben Yehoyada says, the vote is like this: they were Talmidim of Moshe. Shouldn't Moshe's schus maybe have protected them? But the vote is because they were murder halacha b'fanav. It's almost like in kateger nasa sanager. If they're held guilty by they're not showing derech eretz to Moshe, then Moshe's schus can't save them. So therefore that's what happened. This whole business about the Mizbeach HaChitzen and Mizbeach HaPnimi and Kodesh HaKadoshim and all that is the Rif talks about that in some detail over here in his parish. And the Braisa continues, there was once a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer who passed in halacha in his Rebbe's presence. Rabbi Eliezer says to his wife, Ima Shalom. Ima, but Ima is not part of her name, by the way. Ima is a title, like nowadays you use Mrs. Rebbitzin. In those times they used Ima as such a title. Her actual name was Shalom. We think of Shalom as being a man's name, but apparently back then they used it as a women's name as well. He says, Tmehani im Yotzi Zeshnosei. I will be very surprised, says Rabbi Eliezer, if this Talmud lives out this year. V'loi Hotzi Shnosei. And sure enough, he didn't live out the year. Omra loy novi apta. She asks him, are you a novi? Omala. So he answers her, loy novi anochi, loy ben novi anochi, which is borrowed from a Lashon HaPosuk that almost says on himself. Anyway, ech ela kach mekublani. This is how I had the Kabbalah from my Rebbeim. Kol amorah halacha b'fnei Rabbi, chayv misib de shemayim. Person paskins halacha in front of his Rebbe, he's chayv misib de shemayim. For Omer Rabbi Baba Chana, and furthermore, Rabbi Baba Chana says, Omer Rabbi Baba Chana, Oisei Talmud Yehuda ben Guri Yishmai. He was a little more detailed. That Talmud's name was Yehuda ben Guria, and he was three parasa away, and the Gemara is assuming that means that he was three parasa away when he passed him, and still he was punished so severely. So doesn't that show that it doesn't have to be the fun of that even within three parasa is enough for it to be Chayiv Misa? The Gemara says, no, b'fanav hava. It actually was in the presence. In other words, Marsha says that when the Braisa says b'fanav hoya, at this point, we're assuming that Rabbi Baba Chana means, it just means b'fanav, meaning while Rabbi Eliezer was alive. And the point is, in other words, by Nadav and Avihu, it was b'fanav. Moshe was actually right there at the Mivurim. So therefore, maybe because of that, the Gemara is using the word b'fanav with the story of Yehuda ben Guria, even though it wasn't in fact b'fanav, he was three parsa away. The Gemara says, well, how can you say b'fanav? Rabbi Baba Chana is saying he was three parsa away. So the Gemara answers back, v'litai meich. And knew, and according to your svara that you're even asking the question, Shmoy v'shem Aviv Lama, why is it important to mention his name and his father's name? Ela shalotema moshal hoya. The point is, you shouldn't think that it's a moshal. We have something similar by Eiv, Marsha points out. You have the Gemara mentions over there, they have different opinions. When Eiv lived, and you have one opinion that moshal hoya, so the Gemara says over there can't, because then why would it bother mentioning where he lived and all that? So it must be that he actually existed. So by the same token over here, if we just said Talmid Echad, then we could think that maybe it's Moshe, that Rabbi Eliezer could have had such a Talmud and so forth. Now when we're giving a name and so forth, it's clear that it was actually so. So therefore, in other words, when we're saying b'funav, so we don't actually mean that. So Rabbi Yochanan, by mentioning the Sholosh Parsois, is telling us more details about what actually happened over there, and therefore you should know it's not only b'funav that it's a problem, even when it's within Sholosh Parsois is also a problem when he's a Talmud. Again, when he's a Talmud Chaver, then based on the Gemara before, it might be different, but a plain Talmud has no business paskin halacha even within three parsois or whatever. Why it is, by the way, that a person should be chayav mista for such a thing. So there's a couple of different reasons that are given. One of them is because by doing that, he's humiliating the Zurebi. In effect, he's saying, I don't need him. I can be on my own. And to be malbin pnei chaver barabim, even a chaver, is a pretty serious thing. So how much more so one Zurebi? Another idea has to do with the fact that when a person does that, then in effect he's saying, not only he's embarrassing his Rebbe, but he's also saying in effect that I don't need the whole concept of a Masoda of Torah Shabbat Peh from Rebbe to Talmud. I'm capable of acting on my own. That could have very serious consequences. The whole Torah Shabbat, the whole Torah could fall apart with such a mentality, Chas V'Shalom. And therefore the Eibishter removes such a person from the world. So the Gemara continues. A Talmud paskins halacha in front of his Rebbe, roi lakisha nochash. He deserves to be bitten by a snake. Shenemar, a posik in Eov. So you have like this. Eov is having his whole debate with his three friends over there, where they're trying to convince him that there's good reason for Hashem to have judged, to have punished you the way he did, and Eov arguing it's not fair, and why is it tzaddik v'ra'ala, and so forth. Then finally the posik says the three friends gave up, they gave up trying to convince Eov. Then comes in a fourth character, Eliyahu ben Barachah Labuzi. And he starts speaking, and he gives four speeches over there explaining to Eov what's going on and to understand a little bit of how the Eibishter runs the world. So it says, Vayana Liuban Baracha Labuzi Vayoyma, he spoke up and he said, Sir Anili Yomim, I am young in years, Va'atim Yeshishim, and you three friends are old, Alkein Zochalti Vo'ira, therefore I was trembling and I was afraid, Mechavois Dei Eschem, from speaking up and informing you of my das, of what I'm thinking. But then he goes on to say that since you're not speaking, then I figured I have no choice. So the simple meaning of zochalti means I was afraid, I was trembling. But ksiv hocha zochalti, uchtiv osim im chamas zoich alei ofer, you haven't mentioned zoich alei ofer, those the creatures that crawl, the venom of creatures that crawl in the dust, meaning snakes. So therefore, the connection is that that Elihu was saying, in effect, I'm like a Talmud compared to you, my elders who are like my Rebbeim, and if I speak up in your presence where I shouldn't be, then I would deserve zochalti, I would deserve to be bitten by zoichalei ofer. So we see that connection. Why taka davka a snake? There's a couple of different points about that. Marsha says the reason is we find by the Nochash HaKadmoni that he's kind of speaking out of turn in front of Hashem. You know, the famous thing, Divrei Rav, Divrei Tam, Divrei Mishaymin, that he goes and tells Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and afterwards he would have tried to defend himself and saying, so what do you want from me? You should have known to listen to the Eibishter rather than to me, and therefore Hashem didn't allow him even to make that argument because he's a Mesis, and you don't allow a Mesis to make his arguments, and therefore the Eibishter just tells him the consequences. But we see, in other words, that he was like that, a Talmud speaking in front of his Rebbe. The Rif mentions another point over here, which is that the Nachash actually literally paskin something that Hashem hadn't said. Namely, we know Hashem only said not to eat from the tree, and the Nachash, or actually Otsa Bolum, argues wasn't really the Nachash, it was Chava, but whatever, that added to touch the tree. So therefore, he's literally being Moda Halacha b'fnei Rabbi. Otsa Bolum has a long discussion about that, and he says a different point. Is that he argues with the Rif, but he says one reason might be he's in effect what he's doing is saying Lashon Hara about his Rebbe. He's in effect saying my Rebbe is not capable of passing in halacha, and therefore I got to step in and do it. A Nachash is the symbol of the Baal Lashon Hara, as we find the Nachash HaKadmoni speaking Lashon Hara about Hashem. So therefore that might be a reason he says why the connection with a Nachash. So Mechila asks, Iyun Yaakov says, why does the Gemara say, Ro'oi la'kishin nachash? The point is, his Rebbe may well forgive him. But nevertheless, he should know that he was roy, he deserved to be bitten by a snake. He can thank the fact that his Rebbe was moichel him, that he's not actually getting bitten by one. Otsa Bolum, by the way, editorializes a little bit over here and comments. He says, in our generation, you find such things, Talmidim who speak out chutzpidik against their Rebbes and claim you can't listen to the elders, or we're the younger generation and we know better. So that kind of thing, you know, we usually think that started in the 1960s, but apparently that goes back a ways. Ze'iri Omer Rav Chanina Nikra Choyte. Ze'iri says in the name of Rav Chanina, another thing, a Talmud who paskins in front of his Rebbe is called a Choyte, is called a sinner. Shenemar, as Dovra Malach says in Tillim, Belibit Safanti Imrasecha, I've hidden your words in my heart, Laman Lo'ech Talach, in order that I don't sin before you. The next piece of Gemara is going to point out that this is referring to when Dovra Malach's Rebbe, Ira HaYairi, was still alive. So then David would hold back and keep the piskei halacha that he had in his heart, because otherwise, he's saying, otherwise I would be a choyte. In fact, Marasha says, you look at the previous pasuk, is b'mei yizaken nar asor choyte, so we're meant to understand that we're talking about a nar, somebody who's relatively young and inexperienced, or Talmud. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm meridin oisim gdolosei, Rabbi Eliezer says, another thing that happens, opposing on the side here, it says, really, it should be a lozer, whatever, anywhere Rabbi Eliezer says, Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Eliezer says, meridin oisim gdolosei, a Talmud who paskins in front of his Rebbe is lowered down from his high position. Shenema vayomer al ozer akoin al anshe atzava, you have in this week's parasha, when they come back, when the soldiers come back from Midian, with all the captives and the spoils and all that, so a lozer akoin says to the soldiers, and he tells them the He tells them the dinim. No. So yeah, he tells them the dinim of kashering and tovel and kalim. That like this, they had captured a lot of kalim made out of metal from Midian, and they needed to kasher them and tovel them. And Allah tells them all the dinim. But afagav de omelach he abat siva liloit siva. Now, Elazar didn't just say as though like he's coming up with these halachas on his own. He clearly says in the pasuk. He clearly says in the pasuk that this is what Hashem commanded Moshe. And he goes on and tells them the halacha. So he's not trying to take credit for himself. He's actually saying openly that Moshe said it. Nevertheless, we find that he was punished. In the sense, now Marasha says, now look, why didn't Moshe tell them himself? We know Bolachlal Kas, Bolachlal Tos, that Moshe got angry at the Anshei Atzava and accused them when they're bringing back the women captives, that Hein Heina Hoyu Levnei Yisrael, the whole thing over there, and therefore he forgot to tell them about the mitzvah of Hagolas Kalim and Tvilas Kalim, and therefore Elazar had to say. Nevertheless, Marasha says, Elazar should have waited until Moshe calms down and remembers it, rather than taking the initiative and telling the soldiers himself. Or maybe what he should have done, maybe it could have been. I mean, soon they're going to scatter, but whatever. He could have told them, you know, there's something that needs to be done with the Kalim, but I can't tell you yet. When Moshe is able to, then he'll tell you. Whatever, because he didn't do that, so he was punished. We find that when Moshe is appointing Yoshua as the next leader in Parshas Pinchas, Hashem tells him he will stand in front of Elazar HaKohen, v'shalag mishpat urim lifnei Hashem, the Gomer, and he will ask by Elazar HaKohen in the judgment of the Urim. In other words, Elazar being the Kohen Gadol will be wearing the Urim B'Trumim, and Yoshua will consult him. But v'lo ashkhand itzrich le Yoshua, yet we never actually find any place in the Psukim that Yoshua actually needed to consult Elazar regarding Urim B'Trumim. Now there were, when they were dividing up the portions in Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara tells us they used the Urim B'Trumim, and then you have also by the story with Ochan over there also, but you don't actually find in the Psukim where it ever says that Yoshua asked the Urim B'Trumim. So therefore showing, in other words, that Elazar lost that privilege because he was murder halacha b'fnei rabbi. There was a bit of discussion about that, because the way the Gemara phrases it over here, Abbas Asim talks about it over here on the side, the way the Gemara is phrasing it makes it sound like Yeshua was expected to ask Elazar shilas in halacha, But the fact is, you don't ask Shilas and Halacha by the Urim B'Tumim. We had that earlier, that David, we had that earlier in the Masechta, that David doesn't have to ask the Urim B'Tumim whether he's allowed to go fight against the Plishtim on Shabbos. He just has to know whether they're going to be successful. So why over here are we talking about? So he explains there may be a difference whether there's a superior based in to talk to or not. With Yeshua and Elazar, there isn't any superior based in around. Therefore, maybe it would be legitimate to ask the Urim B'Tumim a question in Halacha. And he goes on and discusses that in some detail. I got this kind of thing about Yeshua and Elazar being on a level where one might need to ask the other questions in Halacha. This comes up in tomorrow's Daf Yomi as well, where the Gemara talks about Moshe Rabbeinu and Rebbe and Rav Ashi having Torah Gdula B'Makom Echad, and the Gemara points out in that connection, why don't we say that Yeshua had Torah Gdula B'Makom Echad? And the answer is because Elazar lived at the same time and they're on an equal level in terms of knowledge of Torah. In fact, we had before, we had Kates of Seydah Mishnah, we had Elazar and Isamar got private lessons from Moshe, whereas Yeshua doesn't say he did. So in that sense, Elazar exceeds Yeshua in knowledge of Torah, and you would expect that Yeshua is sometimes going to ask Elazar, but the Gemara is saying over here, we never actually find that took place because Elazar had been murdered halacha b'fnei Rabbah. All right, moving on to Yechezkel. We left off, we're holding at the beginning of Perek Mem Aleph. So the end of Perek Mem, the last couple of psukim, talked about the ulam, the entryway of the hayfel. So there's the picture over there. So you have in front, you've got the stairs, or you've got the steps going up to the ulam. Doesn't say in the pasuk how many there were, but Rashi says there are 12, similar to the second Mishnah Mikdash. Then you have the ulam. So then you have the thickness of the wall there, and the thickness of the front wall there is 5 amos. And the thickness of this, now you have like this, the ulam consists of, you have the entryway itself, in the second base, it's 20 by 11 amos, 20 amos width wide and 11 amos deep. In the second Beis HaMikdash, it was completely open. The doorway itself is 20 amos wide. But we said in the third Beis HaMikdash, the 3 amos on each side of it are going to be closed off with wall. And therefore, you only have the entryways, the actual opening, the actual doorway is 14 amos wide. So then it opens into a 20 amma wide area, which is the Ulam. Then you have after that, above that in the picture, you have it narrows to the space where the doors are, the doors we're going to talk about at the end of the Perek, and then you have the Kodesh and you have the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So Pasuk Mem Aleph, Vayvi'eni el ha-Heichel, he brought me into the Heichel, Vayomer es-Elim shesh amas roichav mipoi, v'shesh amas roichav mipoi, he measured the doorposts, 6 amas wide, 6 amos wide on one side and 6 on the other one, roichav ha'oihel, that is the width of the ulam. Meaning, in other words, so Rashi explains like this, the thickness of the wall over there, like this, you have the ulam with the 2 round pillars in it, corresponding to Yochanan Boyaz from the first verse of Mikdash. Then you have above that, you have that narrow area where you have the doors, and then it widens out into the hayfel. That narrow area, the doorposts on one side and on the other are 6 amos, it's 6 amos deep. So in other words, when you're coming from the beginning, as you walk into the building, you have 5 amos of wall. Then you have another 5 amos, of which part of you have another 5 amos until you're out of that extended area in front, which is the ulam. Then you have, what you have is you have 5 amos of wall, you have 11 amos of ulam, so far you've walked in 16 amos, then you have another 6 amos until you get to the heichal itself, which is after the second set of doors. So that's what it's saying over here, that the doorposts are 6 amos thick. If you look in the diagram over here, you have on one side, it's solid 6 amos. On the other side, you have a passageway in the middle of it. So the passageway we'll talk about later on. It doesn't mention it explicitly in so many words in the pasuk, but it was there in the second Beis Mikdash, and Rashi learns based on some details in the psukim over here that there'll be a similar passageway in the third Beis Mikdash. So therefore, you have that doorpost over there, that 6 amma doorpost is kind of split in half by that passageway. And then he continues, Roichava Oihel, the width of the tent, which means Rashi says, what we mean is this is the width, you have the width of the ulam is the width of the ulam, which is equal to the width of the heichel. And in between them, you have the 6 amos. Different other Mephoshim talk about the Radak talks about that maybe like they have a dome over there, and it's shaped like an oihel, and therefore it's called oihel. So far that gives you the ulam and the entryway into the heichal. Then he continues, V'roichav ha-pesach and posik beis, V'roichav ha-pesach eser amos, the width of the doorway between the ulam and the heichal is 10 amos. V'chispeis ha-pesach chomesh amos mipoi, v'chomesh amos mipoi, the sides of the entryway are 5 amos on each side, meaning, so you have the ulam itself is 20 amos wide, the heichal is also 20 amos wide, the space between them, which is where the two sets of doors are, narrows to 10 amos. So when you're looking from the ulam inward, you'll see 5 amos of wall on either side. And similarly, if you're standing in the heichal and looking outward, you'll see 5 amos of wall on either side. Later on, towards the end of the perek, when we talk about the doors and how they open and how they folded against the walls, we're going to see that according to the Chachamim in the Mishnah and Midas, the one set of doors folds up against those walls on the inside of the heichal. So he continues, then he measured the length of the heichal, the length of the kodesh is 40 amos, the width is 20 amos, that's the same size as it was in the first and in the second batei mikdash. All of them, the heichal was 40 by 20. The kodesh, that is. By comparison, in the Mishkan, it was 20 by 10. Pasuk Gimel. Then he went further in. Now we're approaching the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He measured the doorposts of the doorway are 2 amos. Now, as background, we have like this. In the first Beis Hamikdash, there was a 1 amma thick wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, then the Rambam describes, based on a Gemara in Yuma, they had a suffix. Does that, in the second Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara explains in Baba Basra, they weren't able to build a wall over there because the Gemara explains that the height of the ground floor of the second Beis Hamikdash was taller than the first one. The first Beis Hamikdash, the ground floor was 30 amos tall, and then you had above it, there were attics and whatnot. And in the second Beis Hamikdash, the ground floor was 40 amos tall. If you build a wall 1 amma thick and 40 amos tall, it won't be stable, it'll collapse. So therefore, they couldn't build a wall over there. And the Gemara discusses over there in Baba Basra. So why couldn't they build partially wall and the rest parochas, whatever. The Gemara has a whole discussion of it over there. The bottom line is they couldn't. And they had so therefore, they're going to have to make curtains instead, like you had in the Mishkan. But they had a suffix. Does that amma belong to the Kodesh or does it belong to the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So the Mishnah in Yuma mentions, because of that, they had 2 parochas in, separated by a space of an amma. And that way, so you have 40 ammas of heichal, 40 ammas of Kodesh, 1 amma called amma traxin, and then 20 ammas of Kodesh HaKadoshim. The word traxin itself, Rashi mentions over there, or Tosfos, I don't remember which, mentioned the word trax means doors, and sin means, and sin is Moloshin Sinai, so it means the doors or the doorway, the entranceway that protects the Oron, which has the Luchas that came from Har Sinai. Anyway, so that was you had this Amma space between them. Now, in the third Beis Hamikdash, we're saying instead of it being 1 Amma thick, it's going to be 2 Ammas thick. So therefore, it can be much taller. Now it'll be much more stable. So here again, you have a door, you have a wall 2 Ammas thick, Pesach Shesh Amos, then it continues in Pasuk Gimel, Pesach Shesh Amos, the entryway is 6 Amos, which means 6 Amos wide, or 6 Amos, actually, Rashi says, it has to be the height, because he continues, V'roichav HaPesach Sheva Amos, the width of the doorway is 7. So if you have the width from side to side is 7 Amos, and the depth of it, the thickness of the wall is 2 Amos, what else could the 6 Amos be? So Rashi says it must be the height. Different Mephoroshim have different other possibilities about it. The Radak brings up, he says, no, what it can mean is the wall is actually 6 amos thick. Of that wall, the whole wall is not covered by the doorposts, only the middle 2 amos of it is covered by the doorposts, and the rest of it is just bare wall. So that's how he learns instead. So anyway, The Malbim has an even more interesting explanation, actually. In that Mishnah and in that Gemara in Yuma, when it talks about how in the second Beis Mikdash they had the two Parochesin, it explains over there that what they did is, when the Kohen Gadol was going in there on Yom Kippur, what they did is they had the outer curtain was pinned up at one end, the inner curtain was pinned up at the other end, that way nobody can see directly into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Kohen Gadol would go in kind of a zigzag. He'd go in like this, he'd walk between the Parochesin and come out the other end, and he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Malbim actually has an interesting explanation over here. He says the 6 and 7 Amos both refer to the doorway, both refer to the width of the doorway. The 7 Amos is the total width of the doorway. The 6 Amos, he says, means the doors are going to each be 6 Amos, and there's going to be 1 Amma left open without a door, only covered by a parochus. So you're going to have the same kind of thing that the Kohen Gadol, when he goes in there on Yom Kippur, is going to go in from the 1 Amma space on one side, go in this 2 Amma space, and come out the other side and come out in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Anyway, Pasuk Gimel, Pasuk Dalet, by Yomar es Orkei Esrim Amma v'roichem Esrim Amma, he measured the length of it 20 Amos and the width 20 Amos, al pneya hechel, on the equal to the width of the hechel, because the hechel is also 20 Amos wide, by Yomar Elai Zek Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Malach informs me, Yechezkel, this is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Malbim says an interesting point about that. He says the Malach is telling him, don't have the suffix in the third Beis Mikdash like you had in the second. You have the suffix whether the area over there belongs to the Kodesh of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You should know this, the 20 by 20 Amos square, is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, not the 2 Amos thickness of wall. Next, by Pasuk Hei, by Yomad Kira Bayis Sheish Amos, then he measured the walls around the Hechel, around the Kodesh, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim are 6 Amos thick all around. So you've got the 40. So far, then we've accounted for. Let's go back to the front of the building and start measuring again. You walk through 5 Amos thickness of wall, then you have another 6 Amos. Then you have 11 Amos of the Olam. So far, that's 16. Then you walk through 6 Amos with 6 Amos depth of doorway, gives you 22. Then you've got 40 of the Kodesh, gives you 62. 2 of the wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 64. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20, that's 84. Now, behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and similarly on the sides of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you have a wall 6 Amos thick. So far we're up to 90 Amos from the when once you go to the other side of that wall, then you've covered so far 90 Amos from the front of the building. Then he continues, the width of the tsela. So at tsela, we talked about it near the beginning when we learned about the toyim that you had by the gates. The Gemara explains in Baba Basra that there are 3 different words in Lashon Kodesh for a little room appended to a large one. In fact, in all the many places, it actually translates these words with the French word appendix. So literally, it's like a little room appended onto a bigger building. So you have 3 words, Tsela, Yetzia, and Ta. So here in Yechezkel, till now he was using the word Ta. Now for the ones around the Hechel, he's going to use the word Tsela. And by the first Beis Mikdash, it describes them as Yetzia. But they all amount to the same thing. So he says, the width of the Tsela of this little appended building, the chamber over there behind. Arba Amos, Saviv Labayis, Saviv, Saviv, Labayis, Saviv, they're all 4 Amos wide, all around the house, all around the Hechel, and all around the Kodesh, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You have little rooms like that, each of which is 4 Amos wide. So you have one behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and you have 5 on each side, you have 5 on each side. He doesn't give the length of them, but based on the layout, then we can calculate the length of them. Rashi says each one of them, the ones by the sides, were each 11 Amos, long, as we'll do the calculation later on, and the one behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim is equal in width. So the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 20 Amos. So that one is 20 by 4, and all the other ones are 11 by 4. Continues, Pasuk Vav, V'hatzlois, Tselah el Tselah, Sholosh u'Shloshim pa'amim. These slois, these little chambers, the toyim, there's 33, they're one next to the other 33 times. Meaning what you have is you have 11 on the ground floor. So you have 5 and 5 and then 1 in the back. another 11 on top of them, and another 11 on top of that. So there are three stories. Rashi points out in the, from Mishnayos Midos, in the second Beis Hamikdash, there were 38 of them. The second Beis Hamikdash was laid out differently. They weren't quite so long. There you had 15 on each of the long walls and three in the back. And what you actually had is you had in the second Beis Hamikdash, you had the side ones, you had five, another five on top of them, and another five on top of that. And the ones in the back, you had three, and then two. The top layer in back behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim was built as two of them instead of three. So you had altogether 38. But here in the third Beis Hamikdash, instead, you're going to have five on each of the long walls and one in the back. And it's exactly repeated two more times. So you have a total of 33. Rashi explains, he says that they're each 12 amos long, because later on in Pasuk Tess, we'll get to it next week, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to talk about there's something called the Munach, an empty space. There are actually two explanations in Rashi of where this empty space was. The diagram over here shows it between the Beis HaChalifos, between those two parts that stick out, and the Toyim, and therefore, so you have five Amos accounted for by that. The way Rashi is mentioning over here, the way Rashi is giving the calculation over here is a little bit different. There's no space over there. The five Amos space that it mentions in Pasuk Tess is actually elsewhere, and therefore you have 12 Amos each for the Toyim. So Rashi calculates, you have five Toyim each 12 Amos, and then you have five Amos of wall between one and the next. So therefore, so far that gives you 60 plus 25 is 85. Then you have, another five of the munach of that space. So that gives you 90. So that's one way of calculating it, and we'll talk about next time. Be'ez Hashem, there are two different possible ways of calculating it. We'll continue with analyzing Pasuk Vav. We'll continue that next time. Be'ez Hashem. So Rashi calculates you have five toim of 12 amos long each. That gives you 60. Then you have walls of five amos between one and another. So that's another 25, and five for the munach. So it seems the way we have it in Rashi seems to be a little bit self-contradictory, because if you have, like, you also have a wall behind them, and you have to account for that also. So it would mean that it seems the way we have the Rashi in front of us seems to have two different possible explanations combined, one that makes each of the toim 12 amos long and doesn't have a space for the munach, and another one that makes them 11 amos long and has space for the munach. So we'll talk about that more next week, Be'ez Hashem, and then get into the details of that. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chavdalad Tammuz. So we started talking about yesterday that Ebed brought the point about who's going to build the third Beis Hamikdash, where the Zohar says Hashem will build it, and Rashi brings that as well. On the other hand, you have a Yerushalmi and the Rambam who say that Moshiach will build it. So now there's many different ways of reconciling them. You have both. One answer is that the building of the physical Beis Hamikdash will be Bidei Adam, and then there will come and be invested in that the Mikdash Ruchni Shel Maila. So we'll build it, but it won't become the actual Beis Hamikdash until a Beis Hamikdash Milamayla comes and is vested in. Or another explanation is that a physical Beis Hamikdash will come down from Shemayim, but the doors or the gates, which we have in Eicha Tovu Ba'aretz Sha'areha, the gates sank into the ground, because it says the gates were made by David HaMelech, and therefore no enemies of the Jews could ever capture them. So those were, and those were made Bidei Adam, those will come out of the ground and be revealed and put in their proper place. And the halacha is, if you put up doors on a structure, then it's considered as though you built it. You have this in connection with the halachas of chazakah on a property. So therefore, so it means the binyan shel asid, you need both things. You need the fact that it's built by Hashem, but you also need it to be done by human beings, in particular by Melech Mashiach. Continuing on halachas of tefillas haderech, you should say tefillas haderech, preferably stand. If you're riding in a car or whatever, then if you can stop, then you should, although the Alter Rebbe says you don't have to get out, because when a person is riding, it's considered as though he's walking, and so it's better not to do that, it's better to stay still. But if not, then the person can say it as they are, as they're driving or whatever.